watch the playback might be relevant, because we're talking a lot about the
absolutely.
value and the benefits of networking in the current environment, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, good shout, Gary.
So it'd be worth half an hour of your time.
Yeah, we had a really good session last week. It went really well. Apart from
Okay.
my technology failed in the last 10 minutes, which is pretty crap, but never mind.
Like Norman Collier.
Well, I'll have a look.
Oh, you're showing your age there, Gary.
Hi, I'm Nikki, and I just want to say thank you for all the recordings. Even though I haven't attended meetings, I've really enjoyed listening to them, and they've been really helpful.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you. Thanks for coming along. Chris, if you can hear us, you're sharing your screen for some reason.
Yeah, I'm sort of clicking the wrong buttons, I'm afraid.
Oh,
sorry.
All right. I thought he was doing a presentation.
No.
I was going to sit back and fold my arms and like...
Oh, taking over.
We just love technology.
Yeah.
And we just, yeah.
Careful, Chris.
Yeah, at least it's all good stuff on there.
Yeah, there's nothing inappropriate on your browser.
Sorry, I don't know what... Sorry, I've kind of made a mess of it. Sorry.
You should have a button at the top that says stop sharing the screen if you
stop
have
a sharing, yeah.
Red page. Button.
It's usually a green button.
No, the stop sharing is a red button.
Oh, hang on. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, the red one on yours. You know, I was in a meeting just now and a guy did exactly the same thing and we had to sit there watching his screen the whole presentation. You couldn't get out of it.
I don't know what I'm doing.
What was on the screen?
Fortunately, he changed it to his email invitation for the meeting because he couldn't do it.
Okay.
So it was okay. It was fine.
Oh dear.
Naughty.
Chris, we can go through all your emails now. He's playing.
I think Georgina's on the phone. Yeah.
I do hope so.
Oh, Georgina's just phoned me to try and rescue me.
You can always leave the meeting and come in again.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest.
That might be best, yeah.
Hello?
That's what I've said to him. Come out of the meeting.
Yeah. Leave the meeting.
Dad?
Yeah. Right.
I always rely on my daughters to help me out in these situations.
That was funny. Sorry.
Let's start. Gary.
Absolutely. Fab. So listen, thanks for your time, everybody, today. I think, as I said 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was chairing this meeting, that, you know, we're into week 6 now. And I think people have got through that initial anger phase. They've got through that initial, oh my goodness, what's the impact of this phase? And I think a lot of people now are starting to think about what's next.
Yeah.
Now, whether they'll lift the restrictions next week, whether they roll it on 3 weeks, there's a lot of talk starting to be about lifting those restrictions. And a lot of the conversations I'm having with the clients at the moment around starting to forecast for the next 9 months, you know, 6 months to the end of the year, starting to forecast what their revenues, profits and cash is going to look like for the next period of time, because they need to make decisions around, you know, how far do they cut back with staff? What do they need to do with alternative revenue streams? Do they look at funding? And if so, what funding over what period, at what repayment rate? So a lot of the questions I'm having is around forecasting. And I think for me, it's really, really difficult. And this is the essence of the conversation I want us to focus on today, is I personally think it's nigh on impossible to have any kind of reliable forecast in the current environment. A wise man used to say to me, there's only two types of forecast. There's a lucky one and there's a wrong one. And I think in the current environment, it's even more difficult to forecast. But all of the banks, all of the lenders that I've been speaking to are saying, we'll only lend you money if you give us some kind of forecast so we can look at serviceability of the loan. Well, how reliable is that forecast? So the conversations I've been having with clients is they should look at maybe an optimistic forecast, because is there going to be a bounce back? Is there going to be an even bigger bounce back? They should look at a very pessimistic forecast. And they should maybe look at a realistic forecast. And based on those three scenarios, they can do some modelling to look at what they should be doing with the staff, their overheads, their offices, the rent, etc. So I guess the debate for me this morning was to, you know, the conversations we're having with our clients, realistically, how can we guide them in the current environment about how they should be forecasting so they can make some informed decisions about what to do over the next 3, 6, 9 months? Anybody want to kick us off?
Gary, I think it's a really interesting area. One of the things I'd be interested to hear from you for your existing clients is how mature are they already at forecasting?
Okay, that's a good question. I don't think my answer would be any different to many other answers that if you were to ask around the table, that some clients are very, very good at forecasting and they reliably and religiously forecast and update forecasts. Some don't do it as often, and others are quite poor at it. And part of that is down to the discipline of the business owner. Part of that is down to the quality of the accountant. And I guess part of it is to how hard I prod them in the eye if they're not stepping up to the plate. Mm-hmm. But certainly those that weren't forecasting at all, or those that were poor at forecasting, are starting to realize the error of their ways.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I can answer it. I've got some clients who are really excellent, and we actually manage to forecast a lot of the time, whereas others say, oh, it's too difficult, I haven't got time to do that.
Yeah.
You know, if I do all of that, I'm getting away from running, doing what I need to do.
Yeah.
And so I think there's something for me about I totally agree with forecasting. I absolutely think it's one of the fundamentals of business development. But I just think, in answer to your question, it probably varies on the maturity of the client.
Yeah.
I think Brian, go on.
In my experience, not many business owners have even considered forecasting. I don't think they have the time, the inclination, or the knowledge to want to do it. And I think it's prompts from people like us once we prompt them, they realise how useful it is. But it's not really, in my experience, I don't think it's, I've met many clients or customers or any companies that have used forecasting much at all. And I've been a finance manager for many years working with different industries, but I don't think they've, before becoming a consultant, I don't think they really were using forecasting at all until I introduced it to them.
So I think that's really interesting, Bryony. I mean, I as you know, I have my crisis communications hat on at the moment. And one of the things that I've been doing to help my clients on their crisis planning is scenario planning. So it's a slightly different take on the kind of the financial forecasting. But I think you're right. Very often they don't really know where to start.
Yeah.
And so I work with them to think through we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen, but let's make some educated guesses. And you know, we usually can come up with 3 or maybe 4 scenarios that we build flexibility into each of those, but it really is very thought-provoking to help them consider the different aspects that they do have to think of. And that's often a really good gateway for them to look at their operational aspects, as well as obviously the communication side of things, which is where I tend to focus.
This morning I had a virtual call with the British Business Bank and the UK Angels Den network. Mostly around the government's new future fund, which starts on Monday, where they take a 20% equity stake in technology businesses. But one of the things that came out of it was CBILS and the lack of access that traditional SMEs have to that financial facility. And one thing that's clear that's coming out of it is that the banks are looking more favourably on companies that are being innovative in this time and looking to be innovative in the future, rather than just sitting on their laurels and saying, this is our income stream, this is what we've always, this is always what it's been, and this is what we predict our forecast will be, whether it be optimistic, realistic, or pessimistic. But if they can think more innovatively around what they're doing at the moment, if they can find alternative income streams, new income streams to put into that financial model, the banks are looking at that company and thinking, okay, they're actually taking a more helicopter view of what their business is going to be in the future rather than relying on traditional methods of income.
So is it appropriate that, you know, I'm sure we, you know, around the table again, we've got mixed, we've got kind of a mixed, how we work with our clients with forecasting. So, you know, Brian, you kind of work more in finance, you're more likely to push that. So, you know, our jobs as business mentors is to, you know, if we're not traditionally nailing our customers to make sure they've got the forecast in place, we should be now more than ever.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think this is the difference between, you know, good quality business mentors and maybe business mentors that aren't deserved of, you know, that badge, that they haven't been in a scenario before where forecasting has been as important, and therefore they don't have the experience to realise why that's necessary more than ever now.
I think you can ask a question that does a business deserve to be financed, bailed out, if you like, in this current economic climate, if they haven't gone through the painful experience of creating that forecast in any way? Because how can any bank, whether it be government-led or supported or not, lend to anybody unless the business owner knows exactly what their financial position is, not just now, but going into the future?
Can I just jump in here? I think that's absolutely valid, Simon, but I think the problem with the majority of certainly SME business owners is the overwhelm and the managing of their expectations as to what a forecast actually is. You know, so many people are, you know, you mentioned the word spreadsheet and they go into shock. And I think as it's our role to dewhelm and to get them to do it and approach forecasting in bite-sized chunks, so they haven't got this massive oh my god spreadsheet type thing. So really it's for us to be able to come up with a process to start them off or take them for where they've currently got to and then move them to the next stage and make sure that what they're looking at and what they're creating actually makes sense to them and why it makes sense to for their banks or their funding providers to want to know about those numbers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Brian will probably hopefully support me on this, is that we have to, as mentors, demystify the spreadsheet danger that so many businesses fall into. And I know a couple of business owners that are completely number dyslexic, and they, you know, they run £4 to 5 million turnover businesses and they still don't understand the balance sheet. You know, they still don't understand P&L, and it's like, how did you get where you are, you know?
But look, that's the reality, isn't it? That some business owners are very entrepreneurial and they just fly by the seat of the pants. But this is where it's our job as business mentors to hold the hand, to guide them, to dewhelm. But also, you know, one of the biggest challenges I have when I walk into a brand new client and I finish up falling out with people over it is if they haven't got visibility on their numbers, they haven't got a forecast, they don't understand the margins, they don't understand the balance sheet. I say, well, look, are you paying your accountant enough money? Because they might just be one of those accountants that do what you ask me to and do what you pay.
Yeah.
Quite often the accountants are not stepping up to the plate. So I always say then, right, okay, we need to change your accountant, because if you've got a business mentor holding one hand and an accountant holding the other hand, you're more likely to have the clarity of information and the MI that you need to make some decisions.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
But
I think this is a big area, isn't it? Because it's down to their accounting practice. And are they matching costs and revenues in a way that they can see the margins?
Correct.
And are they tracking forecast variance? You know, why is this? Why do you think differently? And they don't. I mean, I can see Brian is shaking his head. They just don't do it. But it's the tracking of forecast variance that will put them back in control of a new business.
Well, I walked into a new client recently that had paid £4,000 to have a forecast done by a mid-tier accounting firm in Leeds at £4,000. And I said, like, let me have a look at it. And what they've done is they've taken the revenue from the previous 2 years, they'd calculate the mean average and they'd put in basically a flat revenue line for the next 12 months, even though their revenue was cyclical.
Yeah.
And they paid $4,000 for it. And basically what they've done is the partner's won the work. They've passed it down to a junior member of staff that's barely qualified.
Yeah.
Probably still in short trousers.
Yeah.
And they've not properly briefed them. They don't have the ability to ask the right questions. And so the business owners finished up with a forecast that, quite frankly, they can't measure and monitor variances on a flat revenue line.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
I
think picking up on Kerry's point about demystifying the spreadsheet, and I absolutely 100% agree with that. So the tool that I use, actually, the first conversation we have about the spreadsheet and forecasting is sales. It's about understanding what sales you've got come in, what products you've got to sell, and what are your income streams. And then they start to actually understand it, because a forecast is about sales. You know, it's looking at your cost structure, of course, and your fixed and variable costs and everything that comes out of that. But let's start on sales. And it does focus their mind. And then I use a spreadsheet tool to forecast those sales, and that they automatically get fed into the spreadsheet that has all the costs in as well. And then we talk about costs, you know, it's just breaking it down. It's making it simple. And Kerry's, you know, absolutely right. It's got to be demystified, and they've got to take ownership of it, but in a way that they understand it as well, that supports them, not hinders them or scares them off.
Can I ask a question?
I know you've probably got vast experience in this arena.
Who was that to, Kerry? Sorry,
you.
Oh, I was actually going to ask a question. And most of my clients are charities, and I thought it was really interesting when Gary said about doing the different forecasts, the optimistic, the pessimistic, and the realistic. I found that with a pessimistic forecast, I'm just wondering how pessimistic people are going, because basically when I mention pessimistic forecast to charities, they say, well, that's us closing. Because a lot of charities at the moment are thinking they're on the verge of closing. So is that pessimistic forecast the closure costs or something different?
It should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess pessimistic is different for every business. You know, I've got a business that's the video production experts, and their revenue has gone down 90%. So their overheads at the moment are significantly higher than the profit that they're generating. So the conversation we've been having, which really prompted this particular debate this morning, was, you know, we need to understand at what point we run out of money. And then we need to understand what levers we can pull to make that point even further away. But let's say they furlough all of their staff. They've furloughed a couple of staff. They're going to furlough the rest of the staff this week. You know, they want to know, are we going to be able to recruit those people again? Do we need the offices that we're in? You know, at what point do we start to have conversation with our team to say, look, you know, we're furloughing you, or is it something else? How long is that going to be for? So, you know, these are the debates they're having. You know, are we going to be able to recruit these people again? Do we need our
offices? I think it's all to do with where the sort of the chief exec or business owner is at on the personal change curve themselves. Yeah. So are they still a bit in sort of denial or sort of at the early stage, or are they starting to move towards feeling more optimistic? And definitely among my clients, they're not getting to that experimentation phase. They're still sort of in the sort of, oh, well, we want to just recruit everyone back as soon as we can and go back to how we were before. So that's what my challenge has been to say, well, what actually, why are you going back to the office? Like, how much is that costing, for example, now that you know you can all work from home?
Yeah.
And getting people to psychologically engage with that question has been quite difficult.
And it all speaks as well, goes back to communications, because you want to bring your staff along with you. You want them to know what's happening enough that they are confident that the business has a future, and that they convey that confidence to customers and clients and the supply chain and everybody that is a stakeholder for that business. But it's an interesting concept. You've got to be honest and truthful and transparent, but there's the point of telling people what they need to know just in time. Because you don't want to cause anxiety when you don't know yourself what the future is. So it's like a spider's web, isn't it? Everything is so entwined. And, you know, it all comes down to mapping it out, planning it, looking at what you know, looking at what you don't know, how you fill those gaps in your knowledge and, you know, making educated guesses if you can. But obviously you can't really do that from a, you know, from a financial perspective. You've got to have a good foundation for that.
What, I know we kind of had a couple of tongue-in-cheek conversations about spreadsheets. Are we still on spreadsheets, majority of us? Or are we using tools like Futrally and Flow? What tools have we got available to us as business mentors that we can help our clients with?
I'm still on spreadsheets.
Yeah, me too.
I'm still on spreadsheets.
Just because it's so easy to simplify it right down to literally with some clients I've had to use in, out, what's left.
and then
you build from there according. And but then at some point that they'll need to graduate. And then I think that's using their accountants, feeding them information, and then the accountants credible accountants put the forecast together in whatever software that they're using.
I don't think there's a software package that accountants use, because accountants, you know, in practices, they don't have software cash flow forecast tools, because they're not ever really asked to do cash flow forecasts. I'm an accountant. I know loads of accountants, and it's not something that they're ever really asked to do. They might, and I've had to ask clients to ask for profit and loss analysis before now, because accountants just do the standard forecasting reports, financial reports, and it's up to people like us that can do the forecasting and the cash flow forecasts and sort of make that accessible to clients, because I don't think the accountants, and I don't know how many of us are accountants, are used to doing that.
Gary, to answer your question, I'm still spreadsheets. I had a play last year with one particular client about building some macros into the forecast so we could roll it over every month. So we were able to forecast, because we had no concept of margin, because their costs were so disjoint from their income. And what we were trying to do was get the two things in line. So they were forecasting their revenue and their associated costs each month. And then I built a macro which allows it to roll over. So I could see the comparison between what they thought was going to happen this month compared to what they thought was going to happen last month, the coming 6 months. And it was hard work to set it up, but the benefit was great. And I've not seen anything before I did it myself. I tried to find something that allows me to do forecast variance and couldn't find anything. So if there's a product out there, I'd be really interested.
Has everybody seen Futrally?
No.
No.
So Futrally used to be called something else and then they changed the name. So it basically bolts on to Xero. And it talks to Xero. So what Futrally does is it's basically a forecasting spreadsheet that's live. So let's say you've got a client that's going to do £1,000 a month with you. You can put £1,000 revenue, and you can put all your different revenue lines in by customer. You can put prospects in there. You can set all your categories exactly the same as you do with your P&L. You can put all your cost of sales, all your overheads, and then it calculates basically your cash in, cash out. You can stick your dividends on there. You can stick your depreciation. You can basically, you replicate your P&L. And then What happens is let's say you've got a set of figures that you want to achieve in April. So what happens is at the end of April, it automatically sucks the figures in from Xero. So you've got a set of actuals. Yeah. And then what they've done is they're just working with the next variant now, which is called Flow. So Flow basically takes Futrally and it looks more at your cash flow. So it looks at your creditors, it looks at your debtors, it looks at, you know, the average time it takes to get paid, your average invoice value, the average number of invoices. You know, it's a great tool that automates effectively what your spreadsheets do. So it's certainly something next time you're talking to your own accountant, or I'm not sure if we've got any accountants in the network, in the ABM network, might be worth just, you know, maybe we can get, you know, maybe it's a webinar at some point, maybe it's whatever it might be, but it's a fantastic tool and it's something I swear by in my business. Harry, and I try to educate my clients to look at.
Could you kind of just spell it for us? Futrli.
Futrli.
There's also a similar app called Cashflow, which does the same thing, and it feeds into an accounts package. And that's a similar sort of thing, but that's spelled with a K.
Well, Cashflow is equivalent to Xero, isn't it? So Cashflow is the bookkeeping system, I think. I'm talking about something that bolts into and...
I understand. Hang on. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
But others are available. You know, I'm guessing if you're anything like me, if you're working with relatively smaller, more agile clients, that Xero is a perfect platform for a majority of your clients. You know, Sage is a bit clunkier. And therefore, the bolt-ons for Sage are a little bit more difficult. But certainly for clients that are on Xero, things like Futrli and Flow are perfect forecasting and cash flow forecasting tools that are literally a handful of dollars a month.
Thanks, Gary. That's really helpful.
Just conscious of time. I know we kicked off a couple of minutes late, so we might have a couple of moments. But I think the other thing just to think about for me, once we... talking to our clients about these three types of forecasts, realistic, pessimistic and optimistic, is that I think we've got a divide in the marketplace right now. You know, I've got clients such as I want to mention that typically work in the event space as video production. Their revenues drop 90%. So they're developing quickly online products, for example, editing, that they can do without having to be on site, that can generate them revenue with the skills they've got. Equally, I've got an e-commerce client that makes bespoke gifts. And him and his team have been working well 3 o'clock in the morning because their demand is so high, because people are saying, we can't go to traditional shops. You know, we still want to buy gifts, thank you gifts, Easter presents, birthday presents, whatever it might be. They're literally busier than they've ever been because people are using e-commerce. So might be a little
Gary, I've got loads of birthdays coming up.
They're called Perfect Personalised Gifts.
Oh, great.
So you can buy bottles of wine that have got inscriptions on. You can have, you know, wooden chopping boards with your name. They do anything and everything.
Brilliant.
And they literally, you know, they cannot make things quick enough at the moment. So that's going to help their forecasting be a little bit easier than perhaps somebody who's 90% down on their revenue. Any questions to wrap up?
That's been really helpful. Good one, Gary.
I'd love to hear what Siobhan thinks of the government's communication strategy at the moment.
Well, yeah, that's a glass of wine conversation, I think, isn't it? It might be a bit too early in the morning for that.
I'd rather comment about our journalists' communication strategy, to be honest.
Yeah. Hugely controversial, isn't it? And they are creating such anger in people who are seeing a lack of balance, badgering and bullying and no support. And they're latching on to such specific topics that they're overlooking so many other things that are going on. And, you know, it's almost an obsession and sort of a sense of hysteria coming in. So there are calls saying that journalists need to be made accountable for what they say. Mm. And you know, let's hope that that goes somewhere positive, because I think many of us feel that that's long overdue.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic.
As a journalist, just in my opinion, I listen to Laura Koonsberg and Robert Peston. They see it as a competition between them. They see it as a, I'd almost go as far as saying they see it as a game between them, as who can outsmart who. I hope that's not being too cynical, but
I actually don't listen to the journalists anymore. I turn off the briefing as soon as they start.
I think some of the political journalism in this country is appalling, frankly.
The best journalism actually has been the regional papers or TV stations, actually. if that's quite well. Their conversation's been better. I go round to my mother every 3 times a day, and she gets, unfortunately, she gets the Daily Mail. And the headline today in the Daily Mail is the Daily Mail are congratulating themselves for delivering £1 million of the PPE to care workers. But hang on a minute, the government had just delivered 100 billion items over the last 28 days to frontline workers. Come on, guys, put it in proportion. Work this out. I get angry, I really do.
I think many people go to the Daily Mail was running a campaign on the countdown to the 30th of April today on the 100,000 tests. And, you know, it's getting there, but you know, with the complexity of the whole situation, I think it's very disingenuous, but it makes headlines, it's self-advertising. That's me being very cynical, though. Sorry.
Absolutely. Well, on that note.
Yeah. Who started that one? That was Nicky, I think.
Sorry to start that off.
No problem.
We're all going to go into our drinks cupboards now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really? I've got my tea.
Give us 2 o'clock somewhere.
But listen, thanks for your input. Thanks for the debate. Thanks for the questions. Well done, guys. And,
thank you, Gary.
Have a great day.
Yeah, it's been great.
Take care, everybody.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.